Nick, RFID tags, we talk a lot about them on this program. What have you uncovered lately? Anything new out there?
Well, there's a couple of things. You know, actually, I was with Catherine Albrecht. We lectured together in early June in West Virginia. Very interesting person. But RFID, you know, we've been looking at that for a while. And one of the things that I think you and I talked about, and I know Art and I have talked about in the past, was the idea of energizing these at a distance. And it came up in a couple of programs recently. And this is one of those areas where we're seeing some breakthroughs. You know, you've seen the reports on magnetic induction recently in the news.
Yes.
The very first report that I saw was back during the it was the Las Vegas Electronics Show, and there was a press release that came out of there where they had developed a system for magnetic induction for charging up cell phones at a fairly decent distance, and that was sort of the rage because it was taking advantage of old ideas of Faraday and Tesla, which were actually referenced there, and that the trick was they figured out a way to do it with only 2% energy loss, which makes it about as efficient as the energy loss in the normal close-range power grid.
Mm-hmm.
You lose a little bit of energy anyway. But then it came out later. It was just a couple months later, there was a press report about using a system for energizing RFIDs up to 2 kilometers away so that you could read them. And that changes everything because that means RFID at a distance, for instance, when you think about them in every piece of property, imagine an investigation, say an IRS investigation where the IRS agent walks through your house and sweeps your home, and everything in it has an RFID tag that uniquely identifies it and costs it out for the IRS, and it better all add up. You know, and the fact is, RFID isn't like a barcode. A barcode just records sort of the product grouping, maybe the name of a book or something might be identified by that unique number, you know, something unique to the product. It's a product code. But the RFID offers one step further. It's a serialized product code, which means every item, each individual item, is uniquely coded. So think about that when you buy something and then it trades and changes hands and so on. Everything you ever buy is coded back to you. That's a big shift in the way, you know, information is managed and tracked. If you think about electronic transactions doing the same thing. If you think about internet or electronic communications of all kinds, from phone to the internet to fax machines, whatever, all of that data somewhere today can be and often is stored. Maybe it's not going to be used now because the sort speeds aren't quite there, but that's changing too. And when you look at this technology, there was a press report in February or March this year about the first fundamental breakthroughs in quantum computing. And I think you and I have talked about quantum computing before. And this changes everything about everything, especially when you start looking at then accessing all of these massive data banks. In fact, the European Parliament, we brought some of this up early on, and they did a couple of reports. In fact, we're referenced in one of those. The work we did in Earth Rising is referenced in those parliamentary reports on surveillance technologies and the direction that it's going, and they actually coined the phrase technologies of political control when they refer to these types of surveillance technologies, because that's how they see them eventually being used and played out. I think that's interesting coming from one of the, you know, more influential political bodies in Europe today.
Well, I got to tell you, when I had Catherine on, we were talking about the American Medical Association, Nick, and how they had just endorsed chips for patients, you know,
right,
to put your medical history and records on. So like surveillance cameras, I don't think these are going to go away.
No. In fact, even, you know, for RFIDs, for a lot of different things, for medical records, because when you start to think about it, miniaturizing identification, something that hasn't made it into the mainstream but has been talked about in medical circles now for about 6 or 7 years when I first started hearing about it, and it was how the medical profession is trying to figure out a way to get everyone to consent to DNA. Basically because within the DNA, they can determine lots of things that might prevent, for instance, drug interactions of certain kinds where people have this, you know, genetic predisposition to certain things. But from a medical perspective, being able to diagnose correctly and treat correctly, this is becoming valuable from an insurance perspective. You know, you can see the implications of insurable risk. And this is a very dangerous direction, and ultimately it gets right back to IDs, because the ultimate identification is, in fact, your DNA. And, you know, at what point do you stop giving it up, you know, is kind of the question. Whether it's your thumbprint at the bank, which I don't know how many felons they arrest every year, but I'll bet you it's not very many for the sense of invasiveness that I think most people feel giving up a thumb.
Well, and what concerns me, Nick, is one day they will force us all to exist with this thing. I mean, let's assume, you know, we do a lot of banking with ATMs. I do. Okay. And I try to do online banking and all that. But let's assume one day they say, look, we're doing away with your cards. Because first of all, people are stealing cards. They're stealing numbers. We're going with RFID chips in you. And, you know, if they just do away with the card, if you want a bank, you've got to get one of these things put in you.
You know, it might be even a little different scenario. Imagine this. And this is, you know, what would it take to get the American public to do that, number one? Because many, 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 many Americans would absolutely object pretty vehemently over that. But could you do it in the right environment of fear? And here's my scenario on that. Think about the recent press reports on China's military advances right now and the amount of money they're spending right now. A huge percentage of that goes into what's called information warfare, which is much more broad than just, you know, hacking into your computer. It has a lot to do with that. It has a lot to do with looking at entire systems of economics and being able to zero in or to pick out data and use data in a way that gives advantage. And when you think about what's happening in China in terms of technology, what would happen if they hacked through all of those systems simultaneously and deleted everybody's data?
Exactly.
Now, that would be more devastating than all the bombs dropped in World War II.
Well, what would happen when our whole system collapses one day electronically? And it probably will.
Well, this is a big area. In fact, our military in recent press reports in the last couple of months have started to say, hey, you know, we're worried because not only is China advancing this area and lying to everyone about their expenditures, but more importantly, they now have an infrastructure that can produce anything that we can produce. They can switch the program on things, making little hand calculators, and now produce boards for missiles, for instance, and they can do it in as quick as it is to change software.